This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are talking about fresh grads and their job hunt. A new piece of research has found that it is a myth that the Malaysian youth basically are being too picky or asking for too much salary as a starting point. So we've been asking you what your experiences have been, whether you are hiring or whether you are looking to be hired. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Lynn on Twitter says, is it industry related, do you think? In media, for example, I feel like fresh grads pursuing a role tend to be doing it because they're passionate as opposed to industries, for example, like business or finance, the choice of which may have been parent-driven. And I do think in some cases, I don't want to speak for all the very passionate business and finance grads listening to us, but I think in some cases, if you feel like your choice of career is a little bit more passion-driven or more of a vocation, then that definitely comes into play.
But just a quick comment about that. I think it's very unfortunate that when these passion-driven jobs like media or in some cases like science, the issue there is that employers sometimes feel, well, you're already doing what you love. Why are you complaining about your pay?
Yes, actually, you hear that a lot, and you usually hear that in more exploitative working environments, I feel. That's when it tends to
be. In fashion also, for example.
Yes, exactly. We also have a number of WhatsApps.
So one coming from Aaron saying that money will come and can be bargained when an amount of years of experience is accumulated. Yes, agree that once upon a time, I was young, dumb and broke, like that song. And I think, Aaron, if correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think what Aaron is saying is that, you know, you maybe start off at a low base when you first enter a certain industry or a certain job, but then over the years, when you gain experience, as you work more, you can bargain for a higher salary. But I am not so keen on that because, respectfully not keen on that because you should still pay employees a good wage if you want them to perform their best, I think.
Zylan says, I interview a lot of fresh grads of all races with almost perfect CGPAs, and I can say that 50% could not speak basic English or string a proper sentence in English. I'm not sure how they managed to survive the English text and reference books when they were in uni. I'm baffled. I confess to being baffled by that myself. I actually don't know what the solution to that would be.
I mean, wouldn't it be the same for our SPM, right? Like you get A star or A plus in your English, but you come out not being able to string a sentence together.
Yeah, but your CGPA should not necessarily... I mean, that is the result, presumably, of years of writing in English and having to, you know, submit entire papers. So it is an interesting point, I feel.
Rote memory is an amazing thing.
Yes,
just cramming is an amazing thing.
I'll give you that. Nathan says, there's a huge misconception when it comes to millennials. I've experienced working with them, and I can say that not all of them are as bad as how they're portrayed. You have to understand that in Malaysia, the starting salary hasn't changed for donkey years, and you're looking at people who have completed their studies, degree holders or diploma holders who have loans to pay for. We also have to consider the fact that many graduates are not from KL, a point that I think, Kelvin, you made earlier, and they have to move to the city to get a job, mainly because there are no job opportunities from where they come from, or the pay is just peanuts. Keep your thoughts coming. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We're talking about fresh grads. But we're also going to be moving on to talk about a bit of news that we had, I think, discussed a little bit earlier in the week or last week on Market Wrap. So Top Glove Corp Berhad, the world's largest natural rubber glove maker, has conceded that some of his workers had breached the overtime limit of 104 hours per month, but Executive Chairman Tan Sri Dr. Lim Wee Chai has denied that they were forced to do so. This is, of course, after an article in The Guardian reported that workers at the two glove manufacturers in Malaysia, one of which was Top Glove, were victims of forced labour, overwork and debt bondage, and that their salaries and passports were withheld by employers.
So Human Resources Minister M. Kulasekaran cleared Top Glove of the allegations. He said that the only possible offence Top Glove was guilty of was allowing workers to clock up more than the permitted 104 hours of overtime a month, and that the Labour Department was looking into the case. He also said that allegations could be from industry rivals out to beat the country's rubber gloves manufacturer. He said he was informed of elements of slander and did not deny the possibility that the claims could be the work of third parties.
So in a report by the Malaysian Insight, foreign workers outside the factory compound in the portal were interviewed, and they were surprised to read these reports that they were allegedly being exploited by their employer, and they said that that was furthest from the truth. So these Nepali and Bangladeshi workers verified Kulasekaran's declaration that claims of the manufacturer's exploitation of foreign workers were false, saying that they worked regular 8-hour shifts and a maximum 4 hours of overtime daily, for which they were then promptly paid every fortnight.
So the workers also said their superiors did not mind if they did not wish to work extra hours. One of the workers they interviewed, Sohail, a 22-year-old from Bangladesh, said, "The bosses don't make us if we do not want to work overtime, and they don't give us problems. My salary is paid on time and the company is good."
Having said that, though, there was a little bit of a mix-up regarding passports, because that, of course, is an important component here. And there were contradictory reports of whether or not workers were being denied access to passports. And all of this kind of made us wonder, basically, we talk a lot about work conditions, but one thing that's important to note is that modern slavery exists, and that it exists within a certain amount of parameters. I'm not saying, I'm not making allegations on air that necessarily that this is what's happening over at Top Glove, but I do think it is important that while we're having these conversations about fair and unfair workplaces, that we understand what modern slavery encompasses. So on that note, let's head over to the lines where we have Niu Su Shen, the founder and president of Project Liberate. Su Shen, thanks for joining us. Talk to us about what modern slavery looks like in today's times. What forms does it take?
Okay, so of course modern slavery is no longer like what slavery used to look like a few hundred years ago, where you can see people being chained up or locked up behind bars. And that's what you probably will see if you search something online on Google Image, for example. But modern slavery today is where people are stuck in situations of exploitation that a person cannot refuse or leave because of like certain threats or violence, abuse of power or deception. So, for example, you have modern slavery in the fishing industry and in domestic work or sexual exploitations, child trafficking, child exploitations, and so on and so forth.
Do you think there is a problem in terms of how the Malaysian public understands or perceives slavery? For example, forced labour could mean that there is some forced overtime or withheld wages and documents, but it may not fit the common idea of what slavery is.
Okay, so I think it's good to understand that there are differences between the definition and the understanding between forced labour and modern slavery or human trafficking for that matter. So to put it simply, human trafficking is when a person is being tricked or sold or forced into a slave-like situation against their will in order to be exploited for some form of profit. Forced labour, however, it's referred to a situation where people are coerced to work through the use of violence or intimidations or threats. And so, for example, actions such as employers accumulating their debts or their identity documents being taken away from them, or their employees receiving threats of, let's say, denunciation to the immigration authorities. So I think what people may be confused about is that forced labor does not necessarily mean that it is a human trafficking case. So it can be a form of exploitation of a trafficking case, but forced labor can also exist independently. I think, in my opinion, it is important and good knowledge for people to know and understand the different terms and definition of forced labor and human trafficking and modern slavery. But of course, the different terms is not something that, you know, you need to be able to have like of the exact definition. I think people who lack knowledge are especially vulnerable to the abuse and more often found in forced labor. So employers can actually take advantage of the workers' vulnerable position.
So of course, this exploitation is sometimes carried out knowingly by companies for profit. Are these illegal practices easy for companies to conceal or to get away with?
I think that it's really easy when, you know, a company, you know, gets caught for these kind of situations, it is sort of an immediate thing where companies would start blaming onto the third party or like their supply chain and things like that. But I think that these kind of things, it's time for the companies to really step up and own up to the mistakes that they've done and like the working conditions and things like that. There are a lot of NGOs that are already working on this issue that deals with elements of forced labor, like, you know, withholding of employees' passports, for example, and this also happens within homes with domestic workers as well. So I think that the lack of transparency in organizations and the statistics of forced labor within industry aren't available out there. At the end of the day, it really comes down to the attitude and behavioral change between Malaysians as well. You know, it can go as simple as treating them right in a more polite manner. You know, we see a lot of like xenophobic attitudes acting against the migrant workers themselves as well.
So what measures should employers ideally take to ensure transparency of their employees' working conditions?
Yep. So I think the first thing is, you know, for companies to be more educated and aware about forced labor and, you know, sort of their indications. There are many resources out there that can help companies to achieve that, and NGOs are ready to jump in and help for that. There are also a lot of local NGOs that have been actively advocating for migrants, workers' rights and traffic victims. So corporate organizations can actually have resources readily available to prevent exploitation in their supply chain. I think secondly, companies can incorporate auditing process where their labor audits are being conducted in a more neutral, safer and friendlier places. Rather than, you know, in factories or in hotels, which is ultimately managed by their own companies themselves. So when they do that, workers can't be open about sharing their complaints, which they may have. And then, of course, allowing workers to unionize, do not penalize them or threaten workers for organizing these kind of activities amongst themselves.
So, having said all that then, what measures, the sad reality that is that most of the time these violations only get attention when they are exposed in the media. What can the public do if they do suspect a company of practicing modern slavery or forced labour?
The public can definitely be more knowledgeable about, they can you know, look into being educated about what are the indicators as well for themselves. You know, even if you walk along the construction site, for example, you know, if you're knowledgeable and if you're aware about the issue, you would be able to see somewhat of like indications of forced labor or trafficking, for example, and you can call the hotline number. You can call the national trafficking hotline number, which is the 999 number, or Tenaga Nita has recently launched an app that allows people to actually download and, you know, sort of indicate what they see. And those are the kind of things that actually the public can do themselves. But I think in situations like that as well, the government needs to work hand in hand with the NGOs that are also working on this issue to provide a more neutral and fair judgment to the matter. I think at the end of the day, human trafficking, modern slavery and forced labour are all issues that are very sensitive and it becomes very easy to deny. And so this is a place where the public also needs to be able to make as much noise as possible to pressure the government or the authorities to get on the case. Yeah, so I think like the cry of exploited migrant workers has been happening for far too long. And I think that with all that is going on, it won't just become, you know, sort of a hype and then it dies down later on.
Sushin, thanks so much for weighing in. That was New Sushin, the founder of Project Liberate. And as you mentioned, Tanaganita has an app called Be My Protector where you can report cases of human trafficking, labour violations and child exploitation anonymously and quickly to reliable, experienced caseworkers in Tanaganita. We're headed now to the news. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.